morning and welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the largest segment of our society. To those of you who are waking up to the realization that there is something dreadfully wrong, even destructive, regarding the institutions that are influencing our society. Whether they be political or religious, media or military, even economic, the institutions that are reportedly engaged in solving the problems that we face are actually the source of those problems. We cannot survive by rearranging the deck chairs on our Titanic of state. So it is time that we hold the perpetrators accountable, that we examine the news not from a superficial point of view, simply like lemmings lapping up the Kool-Aid that is being dished out, but instead, look behind those headlines. Come to know who is perpetrating such grievous harm on the world, why, and where they're taking us. Then in our second hour, we're going to provide hope by engaging God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the lone source of hope that is reliable in today's world. Our number, if you would like to engage in discussion, is 877-300-7645. Yesterday, at the end of the first hour, I shared an example with you that was pertinent to America's current deficit economic stalemate. You know, the Republicans are saying that we're not going to pass a budget that funds a program that is overwhelmingly detrimental to the nation's health. We just can't do that. At this point, Medicare, Medicaid are the single biggest expense items of the U.S. budget. They're growing faster than any others. And now you want to add a 30% increased cost to that when the nation is already bankrupt? When America is already the greatest debtor nation on earth? Are you crazy? And of course, the vast majority of Americans think, yeah, well, the Republicans were having stood up and said, we're not going to fund our own funeral, that they're the bad guys, that we just should go on deficit spending. So I told a story at the end of the program yesterday that is thoughtful in this regard, and I want to develop it a little further with you today. Imagine that you are the governor, the elected governor of your own island. Yeah, it's an island. You don't actually own the island, but it's an island, let's say, off the California coast. You know, we got Santa Rosa and San Miguel, Anacapa, Santa Cruz, even Catalina, off the California coast. One of those islands, it's not yours. You didn't buy it, but you've been elected governor over your island. We'll call the island Charityville. And in your job on that island, you were paid an average of $50,000 a year, and you worked for 20 years. Yeah, you were a good soldier. 20 years, $50,000 a year. And during that time, you dutifully deducted 7.5% of your paycheck each month, and you put it into a trust account. All for your retirement. And you got the other voters on Charityville to order every employer on the island to fund your retirement as well. And so there was another 7.5% of your $50,000 annual wage over the course of 20 years that was donated to your trust account for your retirement. So at the end of 20 years of work, you would have contributed $75,000 to your retirement. And your employers over that period of time, they would have contributed another $75,000 through theft. But nonetheless, you feel good about it because you all voted on it. But during the 20 years that you were the governor of Charityville, you recognize that all of the other island governors, well, they had really nice boats. You know, the boats were good at getting the people back and forth from the mainland to your island, so you needed a nice boat, and you put down a $50,000 deposit for your boat, and you borrowed $100,000, which, of course, you didn't pay back, but you paid the interest on it. And then you realize that, you know, really to oversee your island, to make sure you knew what was happening on your island, to protect your island, to you know, keep up with all of the other island governors who had airplanes, you plunk down another $50,000 for a fast airplane, borrowing another $100,000 that, of course, you didn't pay back. And you didn't take this amount from your own savings. No, you took this amount from the trust fund. After all, you know, it was for the retirement a long time down there, and by that time, you, of course, will have come up with a way to pay it back, except you didn't. You know, and then you've got all of this land to maintain on your island, and you've got your own home and other properties to maintain, so you spend $15,000 a year that you deduct from your trust fund to maintain the properties, your gardener and your housekeeper. Now, and since you want to be popular, because you want the voters on the island to continue to vote you to be the governor of Charityville, every year you throw a big bash. You feed them, you entertain your community. And because you're so efficient, it only costs you $15,000 to throw the bash for all of the residents on Charityville. And all the while, you are a good guy. You're compassionate. So you pay your own, your family's, and your relatives' health care costs. You do so out of the same pot. You use the Affordable Care Act, so it only costs you a scant $1,200 a month. Well, where would you be? You're now 20 years down the road. You've dutifully deducted 7.5% of every paycheck. So you've contributed $75,000 to your trust fund for your retirement. Now, if you were to be retired for 20 years, you could pay yourself a whopping $313 a month. That's what you've earned. Oh, you say, but, you know, we passed a law that forced our employers to put in another 7.5%, so there's another $75,000 in that trust fund. Oh, so now you can pay yourself $625 a month. That's how much you could afford to pay based upon what you had contributed, what your employers had been forced to contribute, that $150,000 divided by 20 years of retirement is $625 a month. Oh, great. You say, I can't live on that. I need five times that. Well, so, what, borrow more money and have your children pay for it? But, you know, there really isn't $150,000 in your retirement trust fund now because, well, you bought the boat for $50,000 out of the trust fund, just like the Navy, and you borrowed $100,000. You didn't pay it back. And then, like the Air Force, you plunked down $50,000 for a really fast, shiny airplane and borrowed $100,000, but you didn't pay it back. And then there was the $15,000 a year to your gardener and to the housekeeper for the maintenance of your various buildings. That accrues to another $300,000 that you didn't pay back. And then, because you threw the $15,000 party every year, that's another $300,000 over 20 years that you deducted right from that trust account. Oh, and then there was the health care that you paid for your family and for your relatives. Out of the same pot, that was $1,200 a month because you got the Affordable Care Act. That was another $288,000 over the course of 20 years. So are you now? You're looking for your trust fund, demanding that it pay you not $313 a month, which you've contributed, not $625 a month based upon what you've forced your employers to contribute because you voted on it. But you want 5 times that amount per month. But from what? There's no money there. As a matter of fact, where the money was placed, there's now $1 million worth of debt. And in Charityville, you know, somebody's got to be responsible for that debt. Somebody dutifully loaned you that money. And so you now have $1 million worth of debt that your children have to pay. But you don't mind. You want your money. After all, you don't have 7.5% of your paycheck to put into this fund every month. Let's forget about the fact that you squandered it 10 times over. You want your money. And it's okay with you if that debt is passed on to your children. And then what if in Charityville we get the uppities? We think that, you know, we really need to be compassionate. And we need to act like we're a big-time operator on the world stage. We have exceptionalism, manifest destiny. So what do? You spend another $10,000 a year protecting your possessions and assets because you're so exceptional, you think the whole world's coming to get them. You spend another $10,000 a year educating your children and your neighbor's children because, well, that's going to make them exceptional. You spend another $10,000 a year taking care of the tired who, you know, they're too exceptional to have to actually work, and the retired, so that they continue to vote for you and keep you in office. And all of a sudden, rather than having $1 million in debt, you've got two. That, my friends, is America. It's exactly what we have done. And you've got all those retirees out there that are saying, I'm not going to vote for anyone who even hints at messing with my Social Security. I paid for it. And I'm not going to vote for anyone who threatens to take away my Medicare. Especially recognizing that 80% of the health care costs a person endures during one's lifetime occur during the last 10 years of their life when the government has said, we'll pay the bill. Oh, yes, we made this mess for ourselves. We were stupid. We were immoral. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I was doing a bit of quick math here during the break. Yes, I actually went to school I took math before there were calculators. So you actually had to do your multiplication tables in your head. You had to be able to use them to do division. And yes, you had to be able to add the old-fashioned way. I know that's pretty arcane, but you know, before I get off this kick of calculators, I think that the calculator, the invention of the calculator, did as much harm to our ability to think as perhaps any other device. And let me share with you why I think that's the case. When you are evaluating evidence to determine whether or not it is likely that that one thing or another was the cause or perpetrator of an act, what you have to do is you're using probabilities. You know, when you go into a courtroom and you're asked to make a decision based upon the preponderance of the evidence and beyond a reasonable doubt, well, that's all based upon calculations. You know, what are the odds that something happened because of one cause versus another cause? But when you are not skilled at all, not trained at all, not disciplined at all in doing math, which is the language of probability, of logic, then you're deprived of the very tool that is necessary to be used. And the vast preponderance of those who have been educated in the last 20 years, they are wholly reliant on calculators. They don't understand the relationship between numbers. Now, here are the numbers. The U.S. federal budget, $3.8 trillion. The biggest line item is the line item that the President of the United States, now we're a bankrupt country, we owe $17 trillion, and we have another $45 trillion of unfunded mandates, promises that we've made to pay without any funds in the coffer. So the country is absolutely bankrupt, and we're adding to our debt every day to the tune of almost $1 trillion a year. And yet, we are currently spending $941 billion on Medicare and Medicaid. It is the largest budget item by a considerable margin. And the President of the United States says, damn the torpedoes, we're going to increase it, the Medicaid portion of it, we're going to increase it by 30%. It's not an Affordable Care Act, because it's making health care far more expensive for those who are actually paying for it and being responsible. And those who are going to be the beneficiaries of his socialized medicine, they're not paying anything for it. There's nothing affordable about it. You're giving it away to those who are unwilling or unable to pay for it. And he's making it more expensive for those who have paid for it. Kind of like the progressive income tax, where we punish success and reward failure. $941 billion, the fastest growing line item in the U.S. budget, is the health care cost. And so his solution to that is to increase that cost by some 30%. Social Security, the Ponzi scheme that we talked about, where money was deducted from the employee's account. And even if they never worked a day in their lives, they would be entitled to five times what they would have deposited if they had worked for 20 years. It's $883 billion a year. Defense is a little bit harder to figure out, because you've got defense at $673. Veterans, which are part of defense, at 140. Homeland Security, which has now become part of defense, at 55. And yet that does not contain the costs associated with our spying, the NSA, the CIA. Anyway, collectively, if you just look at defense, Veterans Affairs, and Homeland Security, it's $870 billion a year. So Medicare, Social Security, and defense collectively are $2.7 trillion of our $3.8 trillion budget. They alone are more than the government takes in annual revenue. To that, you add the Treasury costs of printing money and interest at $356 billion a year. Agriculture for growing nothing at $154. Labor for not laboring at $110. And transportation for going nowhere at $99. We'll be back in a moment. Returning to the U.S. economy. Here's the realization. We are spending $941 billion a year on Medicare and Medicaid. The president wants to increase the number of people that receive free Medicaid, which is health care for those who just simply can't afford it, while Medicare is for all elderly individuals. He wants to increase it by 30%. The spending is already at $941 billion. It's the fastest growing cost to the U.S. government. At $941 billion a year, that's the equivalent of $3,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. Yes, even a toddler is effectively charged $3,000 a year to pay for this. Social Security is very similar at $883 billion a year, where we're passing on the bill to our children, and we think that they owe it to us. We're belligerent about it, as a matter of fact. And defense. We outspend the rest of the world combined at $870 billion a year. $673 for the Department of Defense, $140 for Veterans Affairs, $55,000 for Homeland Security. Who knows how much else for things like the National security agency that is wiretapping and listening to all of us as if we were traitors and are a threat to the government. And, of course, having a standing defense was anathema to the founding fathers, particularly to Jefferson, who wrote that it would be the cause of all evil, of taxes, of debt, of concentrated power, of fraud, of propaganda in the form of national patriotism. He recognized all of that, wrote all of that. We have considered his testimony. We don't need a Department of Defense. We can't afford one. And, you know, the Department of Defense is probably the single most immoral aspect of the U.S. government. Not only does it go into other countries and break things, making bad situations worse, making Americans much more vulnerable, which is exactly what happened in Afghanistan and Iraq. It's what happened with the bombing of Libya. But beyond all of that, America is the primary weapons supplier to the world. In the case of Israel, who was talking about the threat of Iran, we supply Israel's enemies, the Muslims, with 25 times more weapons than we do Israel. We're the death merchants of the world. I watched ESPN editorial yesterday. It was called The Enemy Within. For those who haven't seen the actual movie, The Enemy Within, from that is available by YouTube of sexual abuse in the U.S. military. I watched the ESPN version yesterday. It followed the careers of two athletes, both of which I believe went to the Naval Academy. Do you know how many women how many women each year are sexually abused in the U.S. military? 26,000. 26,000 women are abused sexually while serving in the U.S. military each year. Do you know the prosecution rate against the rapist and those who perpetrate sexual assault on women in the U.S. military? What percentage of them are held accountable for that crime in the U.S. military? It's less than 1%. That's the conviction rate. Less than 1%. There was a spokesperson in the midst of the program that said, if you're a rapist, you want to join the U.S. military. They will protect you. He says, you might say I'm being facetious or I'm not. He says, the evidence is right before us. 26,000 sexual assaults every year in the U.S. military against women. And less than 1% of those who perpetrate such assaults are caught. The two women that were grotesquely abused, raped by fellow officers, those officers are all still serving. And the women, oh, they were dishonorably discharged for having a bad mental outlook. It's reprehensible. It's inexcusable. And it's getting worse. It's not getting better. And there's no plan to fix it. Because it can't be fixed. So now what? What is it good for? We used it to invade Afghanistan. We pushed the fundamentalist Muslims out of Afghanistan into Pakistan, which is a nuclear-armed country. That was rather stupid, wasn't it? And the moment we leave Afghanistan, it will be as if we were never there. And while we were there, women's rights deteriorated hugely. While we were there, poppy production and heroin production escalated radically. And then what? We invaded Iraq based on a pile of lies. Because we could. Because we had the biggest military in the world. And what did we do? Shock and awe. We broke a country. We took a country where there was very little terrorism each year. And now more terrorist acts in Iraq than any other country in the world. Thousands die. almost 1,000 every month now. The Christian population has been decimated as a result of our invasion. As a result of our invasion, Iran is now able to complete its nuclear ambitions because we gave Iraq to Iran, turned an enemy into an ally. And now we have the Syrian war, all because we expanded Iran's influence by giving Iraq to Iran. Because we had a military, we made the world vastly less safe. Vastly more deadly. The answer is to do what Jefferson advised, not to have a military. We can't afford it. It is grotesquely immoral. It is sexually abusive. It is making bad situations worse around the world. All you have to do to keep America from being invaded is to honor the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That's what Jefferson recognized. You get rid of $870 billion right off the top. And then you need to make radical changes, of course, to Medicare and Social Security because they were Ponzi schemes. You need to explain to people the same story that I shared in the first segment of this program today. That is the reality. The alleged trust fund was raided and the money was spent on expensive airplanes, expensive boats, wild parties, paying all manner of indulgences to keep the elected officials elected. The coffers are not only empty, but all we have now is debt. That's our reality. Let's admit it. Let's deal with it. I want to move on to another subject. It is a related subject. You know that America incarcerates a higher percentage of its population than any other country in the world, and it's not by a little, it's by a lot. Now, we always thumbed our nose at the USSR and Red China because of their prison populations, and we demeaned them because of the high percentage of people who were sent off to prison. Do you know that if you were to add to their prison populations together, and collectively there's many more people in China and Russia than there are in the United States, we still imprison more people than they do in aggregate. And, of course, by percentage, the numbers aren't even close. And a huge percentage of those that we imprison because of drugs, because we have chosen to make drugs illegal, infringing upon freedoms, as opposed to making them legal.
Now, so we must not have a drug problem then, right?
Well, we claim that we have been fighting a war on drugs, just like we fight a war on a mythical enemy called terrorism. Well, you know, the assessment now from the United Nations is that illegal drugs are now cheaper, they're pure globally, they're more prevalent, and they're used more frequently than 20 years ago. Every way that you could evaluate the war on drugs in terms of it having failed, it has failed. The International Center for Science in Drug Policy came out with a report and said the war on drugs has failed. Give up on it. That means that you ought not be imprisoning those who buy drugs or use drugs. You ought not be imprisoning those who sell drugs. As a matter of fact, if you made drugs illegal, or made them legal as opposed to illegal, then there would be no clandestine market for them, and all the crime surrounding them would dissipate to near nothingness. And we wouldn't have to pay the cost of incarcerating 1% of our adult male population. We lost the war. It is the war we never should have fought. Now, I don't recommend using drugs. You all know that. Stupid. Life is a challenge. You need your full faculties to navigate through life. The last thing you want is to deprive yourself of the ability to think and to respond and to capitalize on your opportunities by destroying your ability to think using drugs. It is really stupid. But if you want to be really stupid, you ought to be allowed to be. You know, you can choose to be political. You can choose to be patriotic. You can choose to be religious. Those choices are stupid. But we allow them. And so it's time to admit that all of the money, judging people, incarcerating them, tracking them down. All of the money that we have spent all of these years on the war on drugs has been a complete and utter waste. It's kind of like prohibition. All we accomplished during prohibition was enriching those willing to provide the elixir that people craved. And I'm telling you that the reason that we are the most drugged nation on earth is because people turn to drugs when they sense there is no hope. And most people today have come to realize there is no hope in government. There is no hope in religion. There's no hope in politics. They're all frauds. And so when they see a hopeless state, they turn to narcotics to drug themselves. And that is why drug use is so high. Well, why not instead provide hope? There is hope. And in our second hour today, we're going to address the one reliable source of hope, because there is something vastly better than drugs. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the U.S. budget woes and the fact that it spends a fortune not only in the war on drugs in terms of trying to find the sources of narcotics in foreign countries, but also trying to arrest those who use drugs and who buy drugs and who sell drugs. And then we pay for the not only the law enforcement resources that are overwhelmingly taxed for this one issue, and then the courts, which are overwhelmingly taxed on this one issue, and then our prisons, which are overwhelmingly taxed on this issue. But during the break, Scott, you brought up a point about our Department of Defense costing us $870 billion a year for a bankrupt country, and yet...
Yet, it was more had to do with your dealers of death, merchants of death around the world comment. Just 2 weeks ago, they were telling us we had enough money to start a whole new war, to bomb Syria.
Yeah, sure. You know what the legacy costs were, Scott, for our failed invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan? Do you know what the price tag is for those two suicidal missions?
Oh, there's no price too much for freedom.
Whose freedom?
Well, it's our own.
Let's see. Let's see. We gave Iraq to Iran. And we temporarily pushed the Taliban out of Afghanistan, the very Taliban, of course, that we armed 30 years ago, out of Afghanistan into Pakistan, which is where they were formed and where they're controlled, so that they can return when we leave. So,
I'm much freer today than I was when those wars started, right? I mean, I have to be. The government tells me I am. I mean, I know NSA is watching everything I do.
Sure. And, you know, and the actual price tag on those wars, $6 trillion, of which we've actually paid only $2 trillion of it. And actually, we didn't pay the $2 trillion because we just pushed it off to our children in terms of increased national debt. But there's still a legacy cost associated with those wars that we haven't even pushed off to our children in debt. An unfunded mandate, if you will, for another $4 trillion. We bankrupt the country, making a bad situation worse. Pretty stupid.
But then they tell you it's for your freedom.
Yeah, I know. We're so effective. It's just amazing how many times during the enemy within piece you had some politician or military official saying that, you know, this is America's best. These are the people that are giving their all to protect our freedoms. How did the American military protect America's freedoms in Afghanistan, in Iraq? How would they have protected American freedom by bombing Syria? How did we protect American freedom by bombing Libya? How did we protect American freedom by sending 60,000 of our sons and daughters to die in Vietnam?
It doesn't. It actually endangers you.
Yes.
It creates enemies. Because we're not just killing the people that do it. We're killing innocent people. And then they get mad because we killed their mom or their dad or their aunt or their uncle. And that's on us. And so blame us.
For worse, it does everything that Jefferson warned us about. He said, having a constant state of war, and we've engaged in one war every 4 years for the last 50 years, that having a constant state of war and a standing military causes all of the bad things that can destroy people's freedoms to occur. Taxation. Stealing your freedom to have your money. Debt, which steals your children's freedom to have access to their money. A concentration of power, which is always the death nail to freedom in the executive branch. Patriotism, which is the delusion of groupthink, where you acquiesce your own ability to think rationally and you sign yourself over to the group. He said all of those things, including fraud and debt, that they were the enemy of freedom and that they were the direct legacy of having a standing military and being engaged in a constant state of war. We deprived America of its liberty by having the military. And if you just think it through, Jefferson was right. He was probably the smartest man to live in the Americas. And he left us a written legacy that we have wholly ignored. Shame on us. He was right. The greatest threat to America's freedom is the fact that we have the world's largest military. That's what Jefferson said. That's what he warned us about. And that we have engaged in a near constant state of war, depriving Americans of their lives, of their earnings, of their freedoms of thought, of expression, of movement, and of every other ill that we can imagine. We'll be back in a moment.